Ozil, Lacazette, Ozil! Arsenal are walking in a winter wonderland! What a turnaround! He's come up with it! The scorpion touch! Olivier Giroud! When you saw Mkhitaryan do it, you say we'd never see it again!
And welcome to the Arsenal Canon Infested podcast. I hope you're having a great day wherever you are. This is our second recording. If you listen to the very first one, I would like to say thank you very much. And I really hope that you enjoy this one just as much. Actually, 132 people listened to that pod. I was really surprised because we were going for just 10. And I'm happy you guys did. So we're recording on the night of the loss. We lost to Man City, so excuse us if our emotions are still high. This pod is actually like a monkey pod where we try to analyze how Arsenal has fared in the whole month to give us some context, and so we're not overly focusing on a particular game, but some circumstances beyond our control we couldn't record at the end of January. So thank you for coming, and thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this. I'm not recording this podcast alone. I have my friends here with me. Emmanuel, Ima Daily, Ima underscore Daily on Twitter here.
Hi.
Hi, Ima.
Hi, Simon.
How are you doing?
Absolutely frustrated.
Okay, we can leave the frustration till the other part of the pod. Hi, Mo. Mohamed Amali is here. He goes by at Mo underscore Amali on Twitter.
Hi, yeah.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
I'm sure you will be. You love Arsenal losses. don't even think about it because I'm coming for your neck in this pod. Mastermind Damola is here as well. Damola goes by the handle at Mastermind 1808 on Twitter. It's the first time on the pod as well. He and Ima are actually the first time on the pod. So welcome, guys. Mastermind, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm okay. Okay, I guess, considering I was expecting a loss and I got a loss, so I'm not really, really that downcast, but I'm holding up. I actually do hate 5:30 Sunday kickoffs. It's possibly the worst time to play a football match for me. What do you think?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, really? Why?
You hate late Sunday kickoffs. Some people hate early Saturday kickoffs. Some people hate early Sunday kickoffs.
You
people hate everything.
I just hate to lose.
Now, right now, if I wasn't recording this pod, after like on the Sunday at 5, I'm like buying groceries. I'm trying to get ready for the week. But right now, I can't do that because it's too late to start driving out to get groceries and things like that. That's what I'd rather be doing now. So what would you be doing on a Sunday evening? Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, hi. I was asking, what would you be doing on a Sunday evening?
Okay, I'll be drinking beer with friends.
Oh, okay. That seems like much more fun than what we just watched against Man City right now, though. Okay, so let's get straight in. Came here to listen to what we'll be doing on a Sunday. So we're trying to review the whole of January, what happened in Arsenal in January. We played a number of Premier League games. We beat Fulham 4-1. We went the FA Cup. We beat Blackpool 3-0. We lost away to West Ham 1-0. We won Chelsea 2-0. We lost to United in the FA Cup 3-1. We beat Cardiff 2-0. And then we just lost in February, though, to Man City 3-1. Just to wrap up stuff that happened in January at Arsenal as well. If you're wondering why we couldn't get anybody into the club, on the real deal in January, it was worse for people who actually work at Arsenal. They got an email telling them to cut costs. So imagine you can't buy like extra sheets of paper because Stan Kroenke wants to reduce spending at Arsenal. That's crazy. So we couldn't get that done. Something else that happened at Arsenal is we confirmed the departure of Sven Mislintat, who's been at Arsenal for 14 months. And I think he's going to leave the club on February 8th. February 8th. He's still working now, even though I'm sure he's just giving up and he's just taking a few beers. But he leaves the club on February 8th, and I think that's a very good place to start, so that we it gets us into, if we start talking about the City game now, I feel everybody's still a bit emotional. So maybe Sven Mislintat is a good place to start. Ima, I'm coming to you with this question, because you seem to be very interested in politics around Arsenal. If you were a shareholder, like you're, I know that there are absolutely no shares for sale at Arsenal currently, but if you're a shareholder and looking at Arsenal as it's currently constituted, one of the reasons why everybody was really excited about the new Arsenal was because of the clarity that seemed to be around how the club was going to be run. We had Raul, who was handling the business of the club. We had Hosfami, who was coming to sort all the contract issues that we had. We had Darren Burgess, who was focused on fitness. And we had Damon Ivan Mislintat, who was supposed to be the eye for the club in sporting talent just before they become too expensive for us to recruit. So you're looking at Arsenal now, and then you now have a coach who's here and who's trying to set up his team, and he has issues with his most expensive signing. Looking at Arsenal with an eye of somebody who wants to invest in the club, if there were any shares to buy, would Arsenal be a place where you want to put money?
Okay. Straight answer, yes.
Oh, really?
Yes, straight answer, yes.
Now I don't have to ask that question. I was in the straight no. All right, let's go. So tell me why.
Okay, now, so you've painted a scenario that looks a little bit gloomy.
It's not the truth.
No, it's not gloomy. It's not as gloomy as you make it look. Things are not working as well as the fans would love it to work. Things are not working as well as everyone would love it to work. But it's not all doom and gloom at Arsenal. Now, first things first, Arsenal is a well-run club. So if I was a shareholder, yeah. If I have opportunity to buy shares in Arsenal, I will buy, because one thing is guaranteed: the chance that I'm going to lose my money is very slim.
Yeah, no,
it's very slim. As a shareholder.
Yeah.
So the chance I'm going to lose my money is very slim. However, again, I think we need to have a little bit of perspective on this Sven Mislintat thing. So a little bit of background from little things I know.
It'd be nice if all doors are closed. Hi.
I can hear someone's door.
Okay, so
you might go on. Yeah.
Okay, from the little thing I know, that Davides wanted a clear breakout from era where Wenger had so much responsibilities, Wenger had to do almost everything for the club. And Davides wanted to build a proper European system where responsibilities are shared and each person is a specialist in his or her own duty, and he started what he famously referred to as the catalyst for change. And that change came. The change came in form of bringing in professionals, Raul Sanelli, to head the football angle side of business. Sven Mislintat was brought in to totally overturn our scouting department and then help us put talent young, whose family was brought in to do better job on contracts and negotiations than De Klaw did. And then who else helped? Emery obviously was to take over from Wenger, but as a coach, only manage the day-to-day running of the team and then nothing else. Who else? Am I missing anybody? I don't know. I don't think I'm missing anybody. Now, this is where the problem came in. This team had barely started running. This new team had barely started running before Gazzetti's got enticed by Elliot and his project in AC Milan. Now, that was a huge setback. The head of the team, the shepherd of the team, abandoned ship. The captain abandoned ship and then went off. Now, he handed the team over to Raul and Vinal. Vinal was looked over the commercial part, and then Raul was head over the football part. Now, one thing that was not in the public domain before now was the fact that Raul and Sven weren't getting along well.
Yeah, but it looked like, because I don't want us to only focus on the politics that around the decision. I wanted us to just focus really on how the departure of Sven would affect how Arsenal progresses.
So I'm going there. Yeah. I'm going there.
Okay.
Now,
okay, yeah.
When the news, famously broken by Le Groove, came out that Sven was leaving, there was despondency around the Arsenal fan base. Even the media went like, "Oh, this is the guy who's supposed to head the new direction going forward." But however, behind closed doors, Sven wasn't working with the team, and that is what I gathered for a fact. Sven wanted to just identify talents and then head the transfers. Okay, this is the talent I spotted. We need to bring in this guy, and everybody agrees with him, and he goes to bring in the guy. But Raul and Emery wanted a hands-on guy who was part of the team. It's on record that Sven never attended any game for how many months? And it wasn't like he was away from London. He was in London. He didn't go for scouting. He was in London, but he would attend games. He wasn't gelling with the team. And Raul didn't feel like he was the man going forward. Now, there was a vacant position, the position of director of football. And Raul felt that Sven wasn't the man to make that progression. So I know for sure they're looking for a more accomplished, hands-on guy. I know they're talking to Munchi. I know they're talking to, they talk to Edu. They talk to Overmars. They talk to a couple of guys. Hopefully they get the guy they want, who is Munchi. And then it's not as bad as it is in that angle. It's not as bad as it is in that angle. I would have loved them to stay on and then do the job. But if you're not in sync with the rest of the team, then I don't think it's as bad as people make it look. Without them, Arsenal will survive. Arsenal will spot talent. Arsenal will do well without Sven. Kagyo has been promoted. So it's not all doom and gloom. There are more pressing challenges for Arsenal, which I think the more bigger challenges is, one, how Sven brings in funds into the club, either via commercial deals or whatever. He needs to get more involved in the team. This team needs funds to compete with the rivals. How Emery manages the first team, because hell, you need to get the best out of the team you have. Those two issues are more critical for us. I don't think Ben will make it look as gloomy as it is. No.
I have an answer to that.
Do you think, as a club like Arsenal, we more than others, because of the way we run the club and we're self-sustainable and only spend money that we make, that we more than others need a talent like that Sven has?
Come again. Tell that question again, please.
Oh, okay. I'm saying, because of the way we run our club at Arsenal, or the way the club is run, rather, do you think we more than other clubs, like our rivals, Man City, United, we need a talent, the kind of talent that Sven brings to a football club, more than
absolutely, absolutely. And this is not taking away anything from Miss Lintard. I'm a huge fan. I'm a huge fan. I was ecstatic when I got the information that he was being headhunted by Gazidis, and I was heartbroken when I also found out that Legu's exclusive was true, that he was leaving. You cannot put a value on a talent like Sven Mislintat. The ability to spot talents from distance when nobody is seeing is absolutely, absolutely invaluable. And he will be a huge miss. He would be a huge miss. We can't take that away. Now, that said, you know, like Mo did said earlier on, we do not know for certain the entire intrigues. Now, what I have said is what I have heard. I can't say for certain that what I've heard is absolutely correct. Now, that said again, the one thing that is more important than any talent, than anybody, is the unity of the team.
Okay.
It's absolutely non-negotiable. I don't want to make any insinuation, but it also appears that Mislintat fell out with the team at Dortmund, up to the point that he was banned from even the stadium or from the team. So could it also be there's something about him that is not a team player? Maybe. Now look at Dortmund after he left. Has Dortmund missed him that much? I'm not sure they've missed him that much. So
they actually have struggled for the struggle last season, I think. It was
but
the season.
They're fine.
They're fine now.
They're topping the German league. Yeah. They're doing well. So it also says that no one person is an island. No one person is an island. Some persons felt that Arsenal would disintegrate if Wenger leaves. It's about a year Wenger has left now, and we're still there. We're still there. You could argue if we've made progress or not, but we're still there. So we would miss Ben. I'm not so sure. He hasn't stayed long enough for us to feel his impact. He hasn't stayed long enough for us to see how much he could bring to the team. So it's more or less like he never came.
Okay. I'm going to ask you guys a few questions now. Mo. Do you know who Javier Rabalta is?
Yes, I'm here.
Imad, do you know who that is?
Say that name again.
No.
Javier Rabalta. I think that's his name. Do you know who he is?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Damola, do you know who he is? I'm sure you've had enough time to Google who he is, but actually, he's Man United's chief scout, and he left Man United last year in July 2018 to join Zenit St. Petersburg. He worked at United for just 1 year after he has worked at UVA for 5 years, and we actually did not know who he was. So maybe that just sums the whole point out, that maybe we are focusing too much on who the chief scout of Arsenal is, because
Sorry to chip in here.
Let him hear you.
Let me add this.
He's the most
some of the best players we've had at Arsenal.
Yeah.
Were scouted and done by the Spanish Cardio. I'm sure that not so many of us know about him.
No idea.
Santi Cazorla, Cesc Fabregas, he almost got us Piqué, Iniesta and Messi, what's his name, Alexis Sanchez. So sometimes I think we put too much value on individuals. The team is greater than every other person.
Damola, I know you're here to speak about formations and how Arsenal play, but just to get your own take on the whole Sven Mislintat that issue, just one minute of your take on it.
Okay, yeah. So the thing is, I feel like because of the model that Arsenal has chosen to run, because of the self-sustenance thing that Arsenal is trying to do, I feel like identifying talent early is critical to what we're trying to do.
I agree.
Look at today. Our best players on the pitch were probably Torreira and Guendouzi.
Yes, sure.
Both of them were Sven signings. Sven is supposed to have recommended them. Then look at using Liverpool as an example. Liverpool's entire squad right now, their Mane and their Salah, was basically bought from money they got from selling Coutinho and Suarez and Sterling. The three of them went over 200 million. The cost price for those three players was probably less than 40 million, if I'm correct.
Yeah, and that's the model we need to replicate, actually.
Exactly. So having a scout that can spot talent early is critical to what we're trying to do.
Combined Torreira and Guendouzi today, combined worth, I'm sure it's close to 170 or maybe 150 million combined worth. Say Torreira's quality. Maybe that's overreaching it.
Relax.
Okay, let's say combined worth, both of them, like 100 million.
I disagree. Probably like 70.
Who's 40? Who's 30?
Torreira is 40. Guendouzi is 30.
Torreira can't be 40 million.
Let's move on, Simon. We should have this discussion on that.
Okay. So, quick break, and then we will talk about the transfer window. Hi, and welcome back to the pod. So the next part of the pod is going to focus on how Arsenal fared in the transfer window that just closed. We're able to sign Denis Suarez, a 25-year-old from Barcelona, on loan with an option to buy. That was the team of Arsenal's transfer window, loan with an option to buy. But I'm coming to you, Ima. I wanted to ask, do you have the kind of signings that we were linked to during the window, given our objective this season, which is finishing the top four, I think, or qualify for the Champions League, do you think that the names that we were linked to gives you any indication as to the strategy, the thinking, the breadth of consultations that are supposed to help us form this new Arsenal? I'm worried because I couldn't see it. We were initially linked to Cahill, who was 30 years old from Chelsea. Then the rumors around Banega as well, was 30-year-old player. Denis Suarez is 25. The range that I think we should be targeting. We went Carrasco as well, was 25. Then we went really young with Nkoku, was 21. And then we went way with Perisic, was 29. It sort of confused me. If we were targeting one type of players, a certain age group of players, I would be clear as to maybe this is a project. Or is it a project? Is it not a project? What did you learn from the kind of players that we were linked to in the window? That's the question I'm asking.
Okay, so before I go into the strategy and the rest of them, first things first, Arsenal had absolutely no interest in Gary Cahill. Absolutely no interest in Gary Cahill. Gary Cahill was a creative action. As usual, the media created that. Arsenal had no interest. Arsenal made no move Gary Cahill. That said, we were in a peculiar situation where the club decided that they weren't going to make any money available for transfers in January. My little knowledge of finances and our finances did not support the idea that Arsenal didn't have funds to spend. However, the funds were limited. Arsenal had less than 40 million available to spend. And
the perspective I'm coming with, the question actually...
I'm going there.
Okay.
So,
okay.
First and foremost, the clear decision from the team was to leave all funds for the summer. Now, that said, however, the team also understood the fact that the management team also agreed the fact that the team needed some reinforcement. Now, they made up their mind that what they were going to go for were loan deals of players who could add something to the team and then put the option. And if you notice, they were insistent on only option to buy, no obligation to buy. So you always gave them the opportunity to end the loan deal, so use you for only 6 months, and then leave you back to your parent club. Now, the only player who they were even willing to go extra mile in terms of other obligations were Nkunku and Perisic. Perisic was a player Unai Emery wanted. Nkunku was a player he wanted. Nkunku was a player they all agreed. Emery, Miss Lintard, Raul, all agreed was an heir apparent to Aaron Ramsey. And I think
I personally was glad the Perisic deal didn't come through.
And I think the Nkunku deal fits perfectly into the plan, the long-term plan. So if it's a player who could come in and then if he develops, yeah, that goes with the theme, or someone who could fetch you good money in the future. So that works well. The Perisic deal is one that gives you a quick solution. Now, the problem anybody has with Perisic is his age. And that was one problem also Arsenal had. That was one reason why they were not ready to commit into any obligation to buy. But the quality was never in doubt. And he was one player who could give width, who could give you instance, who could hit the ground running, who Emery felt could hit the ground. So they also were interested in players who could hit the ground running. It was a short-term project. It needed to help us get into the top four between now and August. So there was no time to say you had time to bet, to acclimatize, to bet in. So that was it. For Carrasco, the team wasn't sold on Carrasco. They had a huge question mark around Carrasco's mentality. The whole decision to run away from competition at Atletico Madrid and run to China at such a young age put a whole lot of question mark on Carrasco. And also there were issues about Carrasco's attitude and the rest of them. So I think Mo is gone.
No, could just continue. He'll turn back.
Okay, so
So Carrasco wasn't really a strong target. And it also showed in the fact that they offered a ridiculous loan fee for Carrasco, and then they knew it wasn't going to go through. So what was the strategy? It was basically short term. It was basically short term. Getting players, getting bodies, players who could give the team a lift, especially in the wide areas. He wanted wingers who could help stretch teams, who could also be adds to the help up also protect the wing backs. So that was strategy basically. There was no defender. There was no defender available. If you watch the market is totally short of defenders. The market is short of quality defenders right now. So there weren't any quality defender available. And those that were available, no club was willing to do a loan deal for them. So they weren't going to bother about it. They weren't going to even go bother about it. So they were determined to make use of what they have and then concentrate on the attacking position and then to get in players. Unfortunately, they could only get in Suarez. Suarez from Barcelona. Inter wasn't going to talk about anything except a straight purchase or an obligation to buy. PSG suddenly wanted to make out so much money from Nkunku and demanded very, very atrocious amount. I think 40 million euros for Nkunku for our national to buy. And then, so it is a lot.
But Damola, I'm coming to you with this and what you think that Arsenal's strategy should be going forward. PSG was calling. Well, we couldn't agree the financials with PSG for Nkunku, but you would see that players like Hudson Odoi, they go for 35 million now. We go Frankie de Jong was just signed by Barcelona for 75 million. If you want to buy a player like Sancho, he's going to be around that age at this level. So Arsenal as a football club, if our strategy is to go young and grow, can we even afford the quality that can keep us competitive?
So yeah, Simon, the trick is look at the players you just mentioned. Dortmund.
Yeah.
Who else did you mention? Callum Hudson-Odoi.
Chelsea.
You mentioned the third person.
The young of Ajax.
The young Ajax.
Yes, God bless you.
Or we could even go Richarlison. Richarlison for Everton was close to 15 million. He's 21, I think.
So the thing is, you need to be smarter than that. You need to find Mbappe before he goes to Monaco. You need to have bought Jadon Sancho from City instead of waiting for him to go to Dortmund before you buy him. You need to buy.
So technically, what you're saying is, Arsenal's strategy is we can't buy the top players. We can't attract top players. Exactly. No, this is even in three. I'm seeing it from three streeters now, right? We can't buy the top players, clearly. We can't even buy the very good young players. So we need to go lower than that.
You can't buy the proven young players because once you want to buy the proven young players, it becomes an option. It becomes the function of, okay, yeah, the going rate for somebody of this level of talent. I mean, you can't go to Dortmund and go and bully them out of. I mean, Dortmund took, 60 million from us for Aubameyang. He's 29. He was 29 at the time.
Yeah.
If you want to buy Jadon Sancho that's already banging in goals at Dortmund, you need to pay a premium. The thinking has to be you have to buy him before he explodes. If you wait for him to explode, then you can no longer afford it. Same way you mentioned Guendouzi. Now, if you want to buy Guendouzi from us, 40 million, 50 million, you have to find him. You have to be the guy that found him before he came to Arsenal. That's the way he has to be. You have to be smarter. It means that at some point, you gamble and buy duds. You buy people that you think they will make the jump, but they won't make the jump. But I mean, it is what it is. That's a strategy. You could buy a player for big money and it's going to flop anyways. So if we are going to really be competitive, we have to be the guys. And the thing is that at that level, people keep saying that we need to be the smart Dortmund in that we have more money for wages than they do. So if we enter a bit more with Dortmund, we should be able to offer whatever Dortmund is offering the young players. We need to, in fact, maybe at some point, we need to just start looking at the guys that those guys are scouting and just be reading them of it, offering the player double the wages and, you know, all sorts of promises. But
if only we had the guy who used to work at Dortmund.
Let me butt in here. I think we need to. This generation shouldn't be a yardstick to judge. This generation should be a yardstick to judge. Points play, Arsenal wasn't going to spend even 5 million. So even if a talent was available for 5 million pounds, 6 million pounds, Arsenal was going to spend that money to get a talent. So there was no talk about that. Now, I need us to understand one thing. Again, I think Arsenal made the right calls in all their deals in January. Honestly. Nkunku has 18 months left on his contract. By summer, he will have 12 months left on his contract. Now, Nkunku is not going to play regularly for PSG. He's not going to play regularly for PSG because PSG has gotten again to bring in another midfielder to add to what they have already. A paradox. So, the question is, PSG felt Arsenal was desperate. Arsenal needed this player desperately and needed to make money out of it. PSG was also trying to get the young boy to sign a contract extension to protect his value. So I think it's a game of brinksmanship here. If Nkunku does not sign a new contract between now and the summer, what happens? Will PSG be able to again command, ask anybody to pay 30, 40 million? Who else was interested in Nkunku in January? Who else was interested in Nkunku?
I agree with you. The waiting game.
I'm coming. Now, they did the same thing with Aderami, and now they sold him to Bordeaux for 5 million euros. So it doesn't work that way both ways. Now, Arsenal again has to look at young talent. Dortmund brought Sancho from Man City. So they weren't going scouting into the hinterlands to get Sancho. Sancho was already playing for the first team in Man City. So they went for a guy. But the point was that Sancho had an expiring contract. There wasn't much Man City could do. Man City's negotiation powers was down. And Dortmund took advantage. The young had a long-term contract at Ajax, so there wasn't much anybody can do. And the clubs were after him. You had PSG after him. You had Barcelona after him. At some point, even Bayern Munich was interested, but they pulled out because they didn't really pay that kind of money. So Ajax, had the advantage in the negotiations, so they could demand for outrageous wages. Now, imagine if De Jong had rounded his contract to 1 year left. I wasn't playing regular at Ajax. Would Ajax get that kind of money? Probably be getting about 15, 16 million. So it doesn't really work that way. It could work this way or the other way. Now, I think, honestly, it's my opinion, that even if we want the young talents, they cost money. Pepe is having just half good season because Pepe blew now towards the end of half of the season. If you go to Lille now that you want Pepe, you will spend about 70 million.
That's a player I would care for.
Do you understand? The Ismaïla Sarr at Bordeaux. And Bordeaux will be asking you to pay about 30, 40 million. So where...
You could just go... Around what Bissaka
at Crystal Palace is going to cut off your head for him. So,
those are the kind of names that would interest me.
This is the point I'm trying to make also, is that these clubs know, they know for certain that there's money available in the Premier League. So, if you're not going to pay premium for my player, I'm going to hype him. Now, even all these young players now are signing up super agents to handle them. So the game has gotten very materialistic. Let me use that word. I sound like a bunny again. The game has gotten very materialistic. So bottom line is that Stan Kroenke and Vinay and Josh Kroenke need to sit down and also fashion a way to get in money into the club. Now, because take it or leave it. Arsenal has alerted interest in Nkunku. Trust me. Not just them will be interested. Towards the end of the transfer window, 80 million got interested. So that is the way the game works right now. So even if you go to Saudi Arabia to find out a talent, you know, go to Sevilla to find out the talent, you had better sign the day you see him. All it takes is just one YouTube video, and then you have everybody in the world coming after him.
Yeah. Okay. That's great insight. And just to close on the whole transfer issue. Can you hear me? Great. I just take your feedback in. Okay. So okay. Just to close on the whole transfer conversation. Mo, yes. I was going to take your. Would you have taken Perisic at Arsenal?
Oh, absolutely. Why not? Yeah, I would have taken him. Yeah. Absolutely.
Damara,
you would have taken him as well.
On loan or loan with an obligation to buy.
Now let's stop. You see, that's another thing. That's another problem I have with Arsenal Twitter. We have become like I said, microscopically analytical. Oh, he's 29 years. Oh, there's no sale on value. What's our business as fans with sale on value and all this rubbish we're talking about all the time?
What that gives you?
Yeah, go on.
Can I say something? You know that I honestly believe that, jokes apart, I mean, this is an Arsenal podcast, I can say this freely. I believe that the average Arsenal fan is smarter than the average fan on Twitter. Jokes apart.
I completely agree.
All the years when we're not winning anything, we found.
Yeah, we all became financial experts. Exactly.
I feel like if you're going to have limited money, I don't feel like signing I mean, Perisic is 30 now. Hope you know. I don't feel like signing a 30-year-old
for
5 million makes any sense. You have to play.
He was going to be on close to 200k a week, if you take the contract that was rumored.
My obsession with player evaluations is so bad that I didn't want us to sign Aubameyang.
No, he has a point there. He has a point.
But for 35 million now, and they say you have just 70 million to spend. So, I mean, what are you going to do in 2 years? You're going to have to find a replacement for him. No, I'm very happy with Nathan Perisic. If it was a loan with an option to buy, and then we turn down the option in June, that would have been fine.
Okay, great. Okay, we'll close the section of the pod with that from Damola. Next, we go into the whole meat of the conversation while we're here. It's real football. So, see you guys in a bit. Okay, hi and welcome back. So this is the part of the pod where if at any point you can't hear Mohamed Amali anymore, it's because the three of us have put him on the cross, nailed him, and we're slowly dripping him into red hot burning oil. Someone has to explain to us why we played the way we played against Man City. And I insist it's not a game that has been, it's not a performance that is in isolation. Mo will not agree with me, but Arsenal we haven't won away the last six games, right? I'm looking at the stats of the game. Man City.
Hello, okay.
Man City.
Yes, I can hear you.
Man City had 19 shots on target. We had 4.
Yeah.
No, Man City had 19 shots, rather. We had 4. They had 12 shots on target. We had 2. We haven't won in our last 6 away games. We had absolutely no shots in the second half against Man City. Mohamed Amali, how do you explain to me how Arsenal Football Club currently plays?
Are you going to get your answer on the back of one result in isolation?
No, that's my point. That's exactly my point, Mo. This result, I don't think, is isolated. I think it's systemic of how we have been playing recently. It's reminiscent of the performance against the first half against Cardiff was woeful. It's reminiscent of what we did against West Ham. It's reminiscent of what we did against Brighton, Southampton. Except you fail to see the trend, how do you explain to us how Arsenal currently plays?
All right, Simon. When we started the season against Man City at home, we lost 2-0.
Yes.
We lost. They were the better side of the day. No qualms with them beating us. But Arsenal played with a particular approach. You know, they had this pressing game and all these kind of things. Against Chelsea, even though because Aubameyang forgot his scoring boots at home, would have beaten Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. I can't still understand how he missed those glit edge chances there. Him and I think he will be as well. Now after that we went on this long stretch of unbeaten runs. Yeah, some people say we papered over the cracks in down unbeaten run. Fine, but what I've been trying to say all the while, and I keep on saying it, it's 6 months. We have a manager, honestly, who is struggling right now. He's struggling. Yeah, he doesn't want us to drift away from where we are supposed to be in that range, top five, top six, be in that bracket. And he's informing some of his decisions that he's making. Now, I saw a tweet today where someone said he can't believe that people are having a go at Emery for going to City with a conservative approach. When we spent all years lambasting Wenger for going gung-ho at such grounds, the City team clearly better than us. They are the champions. How do you expect us to go? Now, right from the start of the season, this team was not good enough. This team is nowhere near the quality we wanted to be. Now, this same team that was not good enough, ab initio, has been decimated by three season-ending injuries. More. And we've had yes.
More.
Go on.
The point.
Simon. You're not going to ask a man a question and instead from answering. So allow him to answer.
Wait. The thing I'm trying to make here is this, right? Everything Mo has said is true. And when you put it into context, yes, it's not a complete criticism of the manager, especially because of the injuries that they've had. But what I told Mo on Twitter as well is, and that's why the question I asked actually was, do you have a picture of what we should be, the identity that we're trying to create? Do you have players are missing, but if you bring players into the team and they do the same thing, then you can say that this is the identity that the team is working towards. I haven't seen it. That's what I'm asking. Irrespective of the missing players, when people come into the team and they're all in training, do they replicate what you think is an identity that the manager is trying to enforce?
Like I said, you know, you're talking about whether we have an identity, so to say, from when available players are injured. We have not had a clear stretch of having fit players in strategic positions in this team all season. Honestly, when Koscielny came back, Koscielny was rushed back because we had bad injuries. Now, from the start of the season, we would have said, a fit Koscielny will pair Socrates, you know, with Mustafi as the backup. Well, we've had to make do with Mustafi, with Socrates. So Koscielny now came back just as he got fit. There was a bad injury to Socrates. He came in, and then before you know it, Holding went off. Then Bellerin. So all these things have just been there. There has been too many injuries in key areas in this team for us to have a run of having everybody fit where the manager can articulate his own thinking into the team. Yes, don't get me wrong. I know we've had some woeful performances and we've seen things that where we just edged and got the result. But I saw a stat on Twitter after 24 games and 47, I think Emery, after 24 games in your first full season in charge, Pep had 49. Emery and Klopp, I think, had 47. So this is the context I talk about. We are making it. Honestly, if you go on Twitter right now, sometimes they make it look like us, Unai Emery and Arsenal are on some... I don't even know how to qualify it, but I believe that the stick he gets on Twitter is unjustified from the Arsenal fan base. It's unjustified.
Okay, Mo, this is what, and this is, we need to be able to separate people who just say absolute disgusting things about the personality of the manager. That we completely do not condone. But every Arsenal fan who watches an Arsenal game has a right to comment on the game that he's watching. And if you, it's hard for you to explain to someone why we're playing at home against Cardiff and we look like we're conservative in a home game against Cardiff. And we're struggling to impose ourselves in the first half. It's hard to explain that to anyone. So while I agree that there are issues with injury, more would you, let me ask Damola, would you have started Kolasinac in a forward, in an attacking position, whatever position? What was Kolasinac playing today?
Damola, sorry, just give me 1 minute of your time. I'm sorry. Let me just follow up that before you answer. I'm sorry. Are you there?
I'm listening.
Yeah. Now, Kolasinac, well, we said, what was he playing? He was playing on the left side of the midfield. Yes, creatively, absolute rubbish, because he's not going to create anything for you in the real sense of the nitty-gritty in the midfield. But if you go back and... Hello? Yeah, we nullified them, and we went to City to nullify them. We didn't go there to go at City. Nobody is... I'm not deluded to think that we went to have a go at City. The lineup was clearly a defensive approach. It was damage limitation as far as I'm concerned, because I knew we were going to lose that game. But I didn't want us to be disgraced today by a scoreline like 5-1 at Liverpool, you see? So that's why he played Kolasinac there. And this is a manager. That is why you see a manager who is working with available tools, trying to get the best out of
if the context behind playing Kolasinac in the position that he was against City was to help us defend better, I stand to be corrected, but I think it was absolutely wrong, because I spent the whole first half personally watching Kolasinac, and I can count the number of times he went back to either help Guendouzi or Nacho Monreal. He was absolutely doing nothing of sorts.
Okay. And this is what I tweeted during the game. I tweeted during the game, and I said that our approach, our setup, was to nullify City in the wide areas, which was spot on, because City are dangerous in the wide areas.
He has no interest defending. And if we are playing four at the back, where we're saying Nacho Monreal is primarily going to defend, why do we have to put a defensive-minded player, or more like a defensive player on paper, who really excels in the left wing back, in a position where he's supposed to be attacking as a defensive, cover?
Okay, Simon. Simon, I hold my hands up. Sorry, Ima. I hold my hands up. And I when I saw the lineup, I thought it was a 3-5-2. I never knew we were going to play four at the back, you know. Because when I saw the lineup, I said 3-5-2. Yes, Kolasinac had left wing back, because he's good in that role anyway. I don't trust him as a left back. But when I saw when they came onto the pitch and I saw him playing in front of the right left back, almost like a winger, I couldn't understand that as well. I couldn't understand it in the sense that I think we should have done better by putting a more creative player there who is going to apply himself.
Damola, I'm coming to you this question. With all the injuries and everything that's happened, Unai Emery not getting enough points to how much of a responsibility, maybe you could put a percentage on it, but how much of a responsibility does Unai Emery have for the current lack of a style that Arsenal currently plays with? How much of a responsibility does he have? Given the resources and all that he doesn't have, and the players.
Pause. Before I answer this question, you remember that Mo hijacked the previous question and did not hand it back.
that's what he does.
I can understand why.
I'm sorry, Damola.
Starting Kolasinac in front of Mario was a good idea, because I mean, two defenders. Somebody tracks the right back, somebody tracks the right winger. The problem is, I don't think I've ever watched since Andre Santos. In fact, Kolasinac is Andre Santos that schooled in Europe. Uninterested. Among the current Arsenal players, Kolasinac is my least favorite, because I'm like, why do you have a defender that has no interest in defending? Kolasinac plays like a primary school kid. He's only interested where we are going forward, and it's time for Iwobi to slip him a pass so that he can lay it across. Once that is done, regardless of the outcome, Kolasinac is not interested in getting back. Do you know, the only reason why most said we kept them quiet enough in the first half, the reason why we did that was because Guendouzi was constantly tracking,
tracking back
that wing. It was constantly tracking. I think Bernardo Silva, and whenever Kevin De Bruyne slips there, he was constantly tracking. Left to Kolasinac, he wasn't bothered. He was doing. I think that something during the game that why is Kolasinac? What's he doing in this game? You're not an attacking threat. You're not defensive threat. You are nothing. Back to the question.
But exactly. Yeah, let's go back because I don't want to be a focus on Kolasinac per se.
That question asks me about an identity. How much of the blame is on Emery? I feel like it's too early. If you notice, I've not started insulting him on Twitter yet. But the thing is, Simon Bills, I don't get what he's trying to achieve. I don't get it.
Damola, let me hijack your question again. I will do. No, because I don't want
to... in your head, no. Let Damola finish.
Why? So, is this saying that...
No problem.
Look at it.
Damola.
To Cardiff City. He plays three holding midfielders and two strikers. I'm confused. How is the ball supposed to transition between those three holding midfielders and those two strikers? That thing beats me every time I see him start with two strikers and three holding midfielders. I'm like, so where's the link?
Obiho tweeted just after the game. Mesut Ozil has played like less than half of our games this season, and he still has the second highest chance creation in our team.
As a manager, you cannot find any use for Ozil. You do not have a tactical setup that brings out the best of Ozil. Then I'm sorry, I struggle to see what you're doing. I'm not saying he has to play Ozil all the time, but I'm saying that if at the point, so this is not even Ozil is my favorite player in this Arsenal squad. But I'm like, okay, don't play Ozil. Can you play Mkhitaryan? Can you play somebody that can link up that midfield and that attack? Three holding midfielders, two strikers, Obi. How are they going?
So
how is the ball going to transition? I don't get it. Whenever I play, it's like it's not as if he puts them on the field and says, you know what, guys, so these are two strikers and these are three of the midfielders. I trust somehow. Come in.
I really need to come in.
Let's let you react, really we get in Madeleine's point on
honestly,
this as well.
I do. Because okay. Yeah, you see what everything Damola is saying. Yeah, he's right again. He's right, but context. I always shouted context. We had how many players signed in the summer? Five, I think. Was it five or six? Unai Emery, all the time he has had all the players he signed, apart from Lichtsteiner, he has played all the players he signed in the summer. Once they are fit, they're on the pitch. Guendouzi, Torreira, Socrates. Leno. As long as they are fit, they are on the pitch. Now, the point I'm trying to make is going back to the Kolasinac issue. Now you have a manager who has come in. He has, these are the available resources. These are the available personnel presented to him. They might not be what he wants and what he wants to work with, but he's compelled to work with it at least for a season. And that's what he's doing now. So he has a Kolasinac. He may never have signed Kolasinac. He may never have signed Kolasinac. So, but now he has to play Kolasinac because he has come to the team with the players. Now, Ozil, another big one. Ozil is a player.
I'm sorry, Mo. I really regret that I'm bothering your speech. But he doesn't have to play Kolasinac. He could have as well just played Iwobi right on the left and on the right. He doesn't have to.
Yes,
play back three. He doesn't have to play the back.
I agree. Listen,
yes.
Simon. This is...
I hear you, yeah.
Listen, Simon. Hello, can you hear me? This is a manager who has won three Europa League titles. I think he has earned the right to be trusted. He has. No, he has earned the right worldwide to be trusted. After 6 months, you're doubting, you're questioning the man after 6 months. I will never, ever subscribe to questioning this man after 6 months. Honestly, yes, I will agree that some of his performances have been diabolical. Some of his choices and his decisions have been absolutely atrocious. I will agree. But I also know that that is part of the building process. I also know that that is why he's trying to figure out his own team. 6 months, a man that has won 3 Europa League titles, I think he has earned the right to be trusted. And that's why I'm blind. I'm totally blind to anything bad about Unai Emery. Not because I'm trying to be overly positive. No, people think I'm just trying to be positive out of nothing. But no, this man is 6 months in the job. I have seen signs from the players he has brought in. Five of his 6 signings have been perfect signings. Near perfect signing.
No.
So I'll give him another season. I'll give him another 1-2 windows.
I say that.
Let's see what he will bring in. Let's see. Yes.
On I being a coach as well. That's not the conversation. That's not what the conversation is about. It's not about whether you're supporting him or not supporting him. It's the quality of what you're seeing.
Okay.
I say that. Okay, no problem. Let us see when he gets there. I just have a problem with a coach that plays 3 DMs and 2 strikers. So let's give him one more window. Let's give him a summer transfer window. Let him buy the DM that he wants. Let's see if at that point in time he will use an attacking midfielder. But right now, you cannot tell me that playing 3 DMs at home, playing 3 DMs in almost every game, in fact, because if Xhaka had been fit today, he would have played Xhaka. You cannot tell me that is the length and breadth of his tactical. Don't you consider creating?
All right. So can I come in here? Can I come in here?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So first and foremost, I agree with Mo that the man has got to work with what he has. You understand? And then there's little or nothing he can do more than what he has. Now, so let us look at what he has. Maybe that helps. So let us analyze the man based on what he has and see, is he doing the best with what he has?
No.
Hold on, please. Thank you very much. So, first and foremost, I need us to get something very clear. That Arsenal has got a long-term problem defensively. It is a problem that is as old as Arsenal. So even when we were winning the league unbeaten, our defensive phrases were there. We just didn't notice it because we were winning games or we were not losing games. We were drawing games. We're scoring for fun. So one thing is certain,
we're scoring for fun. Yeah.
And not coming backward. Do we all agree?
Yes.
Fine. Now that's our DNA.
We do.
Hold on, Mo.
That's
hold
our
on,
DNA.
Mo.
Yes.
But
hold on.
There was an Arsenal DNA now, before Wenger.
Emery is here.
He wants to change the DNA. Let's assume he wants to change DNA and then have a more compact team. Now, again, I disagree with anyone who says Emery has not earned the right to be trusted. Yeah. Emery has earned the right to be trusted. You win 3 Europa Leagues back to back with Sevilla. You win the league with PSG. You have earned the right to be trusted, and he has to be trusted. Now, again, trust is not given; it is earned. He has earned the right to get the job at Arsenal. Now he needs to earn the right to keep the job at Arsenal. So, what keeps him at Arsenal is not what he has done at Sevilla or PSG; it's what he does at Arsenal. Now, again, I look at this team, and there's something Simon raised, which Mo glossed over. It is that consistently, we have played into the hands of our opponents. So I'm not going to look at the game against Man City. I'm going to pretend that this game never happened. Let's forget it. Now let's go backwards. There are teams which are better than us. Man City is better than us. Let's not even argue it. They are way better than us. Liverpool is better than we are. I think Tottenham is. I hate to say this, but I think Tottenham is a step better than we are. Now, Chelsea, Man U are around the same level as we are, although they got better players. Now, that said,
I watched games against Southampton, against Cardiff, against Huddersfield, against West Ham, against Wolves, name them. Right, and then we start a game with three or at most four attacking players. Of that four, two are center forwards, one played off position, and then the other is a winger. And like Demola will say, we start with three defensive midfielders. However, either on the bench or at home with a popcorn are the world-renowned creative players. Now, we end those games conceding goals. So we play with eight defensive players, seven defensive players. We concede goals.
So what is the point?
So what's the point? When your strength lies in going forward.
You know what? More.
So, no, I'm sorry, Damola. Okay. My little knowledge of SWOT analysis say you identify your strengths, identify your weaknesses, you amplify your strengths, and then minimize your weaknesses. So if we've got the ability, now with three, four attacking players, Arsenal has scored 51 goals this season, more than Chelsea has scored.
Yeah, I think we're third and low.
That means that is where our strength lies. That is where we should concentrate on. However, we have Europe's best chance creator either at home or on the bench. We have a player who is potentially going to Juventus, shunted on the bench. And then when we want to play an attacking player, we have an Iwobi. With all due respect to Iwobi, I love him. He's a great player. He puts in everything. But he is the most inferior of our creative players.
I don't want to hear Kelechi's opinion on that.
I'm sorry. I'm going to hurt Kelechi on this. But that's the truth. So the point is, I do not think Emre is putting the team he has to the best use. So if you want to play a three at the back, so I saw the lineup today and I thought it was a three at the back. But I was asking myself, how do we have Lichtensteiner as the wing back when there was Jackson on the bench? It didn't make any sense. In our last game against Cardiff, we started Lichtensteiner and then midway, we took him out and brought Jackson. And I'm like, so you even know that this Lichtensteiner thing ain't working. So this is the problem. See, we need to trust. I trust Unai. I believe that Unai needs about 2 to 3 seasons to put his team together, considering again our finances. It took Pep with the whole billions 2 seasons to get a team. It's taken Klopp about 4 seasons now to have a team that you're not even sure is going to win the league. So I understand that part. But the one thing that's more insane is that in his first season, Pep was not eliminating his best players. Pep identified that this team cannot achieve his dream, but I'm going to put everybody here into their natural position and get the best out of them. Klopp had Benteke, had Daniel Sturridge, had who again? He had some crappy players in front, but he put them in there. Klopp wasn't keeping Benteke in the hole at home. So we cannot have a Mesut Ozil. I'm sorry to say this, but we cannot have a Mesut Ozil in our team. And then when we are going to play Cardiff, when we are going to play Bournemouth, when I go to play these teams you think are not the big teams, he's not playing. No.
And again, I'm afraid. I really don't want to make the conversation as well to be a judgment on Mesut Ozil, because I think we need to respect the manager's opinion as to whether he wants to play a player or not. He wants to use a player or not. However, if you're not going to use a certain player and the team is clearly lacking in an area where that player performs, you have to replicate that same kind of deliverable. And he's not doing that, and that's where
he ain't got the resources to replicate what Ozil brings to the table. There's nobody else who can do that job.
Anyway, hello, Ima, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Yes.
Yeah, well, everything you said is on point. No argument there. But I read an interview. I'm sure everyone here has read it. If not, I'll share the link after the podcast, where Emery was talking about football's impatience. with football's impatience now, talking about fans and owners alike. And he was talking about having a balance between winning, you know, between ideas and philosophies, and also winning, that it might take a while to entrench your ideas and philosophies into a team. But as you are doing that, you also have to keep the points on board, because if you do that without the points on board, you're out of the door. And that's what I'm trying to say here, that sometimes Unai Emery is going against his own ideas sometimes, just because he doesn't want to lose a game, or he doesn't want us to fall.
I'm sorry, Mo. I am neither seeing the ideas
neither
nor
am
the
I.
winnings.
Look.
So hold on. Hold on. No, I want to ask you a question. Okay, so what do you have an idea what Emery's idea is?
Yes, absolutely.
So what's the idea?
You see, the problem is football these days, especially with social media, football has become a moment thing.
Hold on, just share this idea. What do you think? Let me see if it's the same idea I have about Emery. What do you think Emery's idea of football is?
And I'm going to answer you, I'm going to say something little before answering you. Football has become a moment thing. We, because of social media, we dwell so much on the moment. When Unai came in the summer, our first two games were tough fixtures against the champions and against Chelsea. And then after, you could see intensity. That's one thing I could see, intensity. The pressing game was there, and there was an organization about our game that we did not.
So the question is now, guys, where is that pressing game?
Well, this is what I'm saying. It has wilted away somewhat as the season has gone. Hello?
Why?
Well, for a variety of reasons. At a point, we were topping the charts in sprints and all those things. And I spoke to someone on Twitter and I said, we're going to burn out. I believe our players, and it happened to Klopp and Pep in their first seasons, the players burnt out.
I disagree.
No, you don't. Hold on. The facts are there. I agree.
The facts are there.
The facts are there. The players are stretched. They are stretched. They are burnt out.
We're topping the charts in sprints. This is a team that has never ever run as much as it is doing this season. He's never done that. It's a culture shock to a lot of our players. And I think next season when they come, they are going to be a lot better grasping Emery's philosophy, better than they have done this season.
Okay, so
Do you realize that Emery has played practically the same team consistently now for the past 2 months?
Okay,
and how am I supposed to believe that any manager that says he likes high pressing doesn't like Aaron Ramsey?
No, hold on. Do you realize more? I'm asking a question.
Is that Damola that said how can a manager that doesn't like that
Aaron Ramsey? It was me.
Okay, Unai Emery has never ever said he doesn't like Aaron Ramsey. He was one of his five captains. We all know Unai Emery's issue with Ramsey.
That is captain didn't fly with me. I mean, two of his captains are permanently on the bench.
Yeah, well, but you can't say that he doesn't like Ramsey.
We all know
the Ramsey situation is contractual. Unfortunately, it is.
Clearly,
it is.
I'm sorry, Simon.
We have to make sure people can hear us, so we have to talk one at a time.
Okay, Simon, hold on, please. Now, the Ramsey situation was contractual. Was past tense. Very past tense. It became very clear to everyone that Ramsey was going. When they told Ramsey, you can go. Now, it was interesting that Juve wanted to pick Ramsey in January and Emery said no.
Thank you very much.
He needed Ramsey to stay till the end of the season. Now, you want the guy to stay, but you ain't going to play him. It doesn't make any sense. Offers came in for Ozil on loan with Arsenal to pay part of the deal. Arsenal said no, they weren't going to let Ozil go. No, so these things don't add up actually. They don't add up actually.
The Rams is
now hold on. More hold on. Now I agree with you that Arsenal players are burnt out. It's absolutely clear. They have done things they've never done before in their life. And after some few months, they're tiring. You could see with Torreira. At some point, Torreira was so slow, so sluggish. Against Liverpool, Torreira was an absolute poverty.
After we made all the offerings in our churches and mugs so that he doesn't pick that 50 yellow card from the Liverpool game.
Now, guess one funny thing. That Emre has started the same set of players consistently for the last 2 months.
Yes, but the fresh players he has, he will not...
Hold on. But the fresh players who have always been fresh all season...
He will not use...
Still remain fresh on the bench. So,
if you are the one burning them out and refusing to swap...
I don't understand this thing.
As an excuse. See, eh?
Well, I don't understand this thing. It's okay. It's okay if you don't want Ozil. You see, it's okay if Ozil is a long-term plan. It's okay if Ozil is a long-term plan. Now, when Pep came to Man City, it was clear he didn't want Yaya Touré in his team. It was clear that it wasn't a long-term plan. But Raiola played until he got a replacement for Yaya Touré in the team.
Exactly. So the thing is that except you want to believe that Emery is developing some trademark plan that no manager has ever developed. Yeah? Like, maybe he's trailblazing. He's in another realm. He's in next step. Yeah? Can you tell me of any other coach in Europe's elite that is trying this two out-and-out centre-forward? Not the Okazaki kind of centre-forward that is a centre-forward, but actually a midfielder because he's running everywhere. Two out-and-out centre-forward.
Goal poachers.
City-minded midfielders. You cannot find one.
Well, you cannot. See, again, can I let me a quick reply,
one that has a Ramsey and an Ozil on the bench.
A quick reply to that. Again, this is the problem that I said Emery has found himself. Emery has come in and he has to work with the tools available to him. He has two world-class centre-forwards. I believe they are both of them. Now, Emery's idea might be to play one. We all know Lacazette is a hothead. Lacazette only needs to be unhappy for two straight weeks and he'll throw a tantrum. And then managing that ego has not been easy for Emery. Now he's playing two out and out center forwards. And he has now, he now drops in an Ozil there again. This is a manager. Every manager has a style. We could lose Jose for whatever he was. He had his style and it was a defensive approach. Emery is not Wenger. He has his own style and he's not that cavalier football Wenger used to play. So he is now looking at two out and out center forwards. I drop an Ozil there again. That might be too weak for me in defense.
I think on the subject we pretty much have covered everything that we cover, and we're going to have to round up the pod in a few so that we can get our listeners to do something else rather than hear us continually go at each other's. It was a good discussion. It was a very good discussion. I really liked the fact that we were very honest about how we felt and we expressed it. And we seem to have lost Ima, but I'm sure he will join us in another podcast too, if he has any other to share his thoughts on Arsenal as well. Just to close, we play Huddersfield away and Bate Borisov home and away. I think we have a break in between those games as well. Then we play Southampton at home and Bournemouth at home. I think this is a very good month for Arsenal. What do you guys think? Mo?
Yes. The fixtures say so. But, football, anything can happen in football. But I don't see us having any problems in all those fixtures. Southampton, yes, is at home at the Emirates. They usually give us a tough game, even at home.
Yeah, Bournemouth at home.
We
will
still edge it. The other one is Bournemouth, right? Yeah, no, again, we'll edge it. And then Bate Borisov, home and away, will coast to victory in those ones as well. So it looks like February will be.
Okay, Damola, how much of an importance would you place? Play in February? Or right now, we just need to get points on the table. So, however, we get it.
The thing is that I'm at that point where I think, I don't think we're playing well enough. But you know what? Let's just get into the Champions League one way or the other. Back door, front door, doesn't matter if we edge the goal difference. So, I mean, Huddersfield are so bad that we should get 3 points there. And
we'll
qualify over two legs. Doesn't matter if we do full and Arsenal in one of the legs, we'll qualify over both legs. Southampton, they only give us problems at St. Mary's, at the Emirates, 3 points. Bournemouth, also 3 points. So this should be a very good February for Arsenal and give us a good platform into those crunch games against Tottenham and Manchester United in March.
Yeah, I think that's where we'll have to. Emery's test will come again. For now, I think it's a good point for us to end the pod. It's been a very great recording session with both of you. Again, I really want to apologize to everybody who's listening. If you stayed with us this far, we suffered a little technical difficulties during the podcast, and we will continually work to improve the pod. As we try to do this every week, so I'm sure every month rather, I'm sure the recording for February will be much better. Arsenal seems to have easy games, and it's been much happier for maybe we can we can also
we will give you enough time, Simon. Despite the fact that some people don't want to give Emery enough time, we'll give you enough time to improve upon.
I know what that means. No, I'm 100% in Emery, 100%. I think.
So Mo, who do you present?
So
not,
thank you.
No, we shall do this in
another. I know you are. Another, I know you are.
Let's not spend on this now. I had a question, but. We'll do this on Twitter.
Okay.
We'll do this on Twitter. We'll have this out on Twitter. No problem.
Question is going to give birth to a million.
Okay. Again, thank you guys for showing up. Thank you to Emmanuel as well. Emmanuel_Daily on Twitter. @Mo_Amali. Mohammed Amali, thank you very much for showing up. And Damola @Mastermind 1808. Thank you for coming up as well.
Really. My pleasure.
Everybody else, thank you for listening. I can't thank you enough. I can't thank you enough, and I really, really hope that you have a great, great month. Join us at the end of the month for another pod where we hope to have a happier, better recording. Cheers. Enjoy, fellas. As we close. Bye.
People know they think African style. People know.